Hi, everyone. We are together for another Basecamp conversation. And the we on the phone would be Jeff and Sam and myself. Tonight, we want to talk about when. The first question that we tend to ask is, you know, what is my life about? Who am I? What is it that I have to offer? But as we get some clarity on that, then the next question that comes up is, but when? I'm waiting for a green light, or I'm waiting for permission, or I'm waiting for an open door, or I'm waiting for more preparation. And so that when question starts to loom in our heart, and I really want us to talk about the when question tonight. You know, we have spent, and we will continue to spend more time on the idea of what is God written on our heart, and we know that's in the form of our desires. How do we interpret our desires? How do we walk into our desires? How does God deepen our understanding of those desires? And we've been going in those areas, and how we walk with God in those, and how does he speak to those things, and how do we respond to those things? We know that we're here in this story to help advance the kingdom. You know that there are two kingdoms here in this world that we're living in, and they're in conflict, and you're in one kingdom or the other, and both are trying to advance. And so what I want to talk about is, how do we advance the kingdom of God, and how does that play into the when question? Years ago, I was really taken by something that Dallas Willard wrote, and I believe it was in his book, The Divine Conspiracy, which I love that title. I am just so taken by that. But I believe it was in that book where he said, look, every human being has a kingdom. And he said, that kingdom is what you have effectual influence over. You really affect it. And so you have influence over your finances, you have influence over your relationships to a degree, you have influences over your work, and it goes, and over your body, and it goes on and on. And he said, the things that you truly have effectual influence over, that is your kingdom with a small k. And you are to rule over it. I mean, you have the ability to make decisions on this. And he said, the way that the kingdom of God advances in the world is when people come to Christ, they come under the lordship of Christ, and they literally, quite literally, say, Jesus, I have effectual influence, say so, over these things in my life. And now I give it over to you. I ask you to reign over my life. Therefore, you're reigning over the things that I have effect over. And he said, that's how the kingdom spreads in this world, person by person, domain by domain, and that's how the kingdom advances.
So Gary, you're saying there's a kingdom that I have, that we all have.
Yes.
And the kingdom is the area of our influence. And when you say there's a kingdom that you rule in, I mean, my first thought is, I don't know if I rule anywhere. I mean, go home to my house and you'll say, I'm not ruling. But what you're saying by, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but what you're saying by ruling is there is an effect I have at my house. I mean, I don't always get my way. I don't always get the movie I want to watch, but there's an effect I can bring, and that is my ruling. I can bring hope in the midst of a despair. I can, I mean, you know, et cetera.
You can bring despair where there was hope. I mean, we can do, right.
I like the positive version.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
So I'm sitting here thinking, okay, why don't I bring my influence now? And just as you're talking, I'm reminded of a story my dad told me. My dad died about 15 years ago of cancer, and he knew that he was going to die. It was, you know, metastasized around his body. And about 6 weeks before he died, I was visiting him at home, and he gave me a lesson that I think is just is really helpful for me. So my dad had some good points, but, you know, like, my dad had some things that weren't so good. And he said to me, Sam, I know that there's some things that I've done right. I know that there's things I've done wrong. And my dad, as a pastor, had done a lot of counseling with guys. And he said that in his counseling with men, a lot of the men he ran into were spending their lives trying not to be like their dad, or trying not to be like their mom. You know, their dad would get angry, or their dad was an alcoholic, or their dad was, you know, whatever. And my dad said to me, he said, Sam, I've done some right things and I've done some wrong things. And he said, I encourage you to try to do the things that I did right and see what other people did right, but don't try to waste your time trying to avoid doing the things I did wrong. And then he said this to me. He said, if your life is about not doing something, then you will not be something. If your life is about not being something, then you will not be something. And I think that, I mean, for me, that really freed me. I think there was lots of times in my life where I actually poured energy into not being something instead of pouring my energy into being something. Does that distinction make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, it does. That's such a powerful thing, because it is amazing how much we're motivated in how we behave and what we do of trying not to be something. Exactly. And therefore, we're not being what we should be, so we're being nothing. That's a fascinating idea. It really is. That goes back to the first question, right? What is my life about? What is the effect of my life to be that God has created me and put me in this part of the story at this time to bring that effect? If we don't stop to analyze our heart, we may find that the effect we're bringing, right, is really trying to not be something. And we may be fairly successful in this, but the fact is there's something we are to be that we've totally neglected. You know, I mean, I remember hearing Dr. Bill Bright when I was at Camps Crusade for Christ say, he said, beware. He said, this is what the enemy does. When the U.S. bombers were heading to bomb a certain place, let's say in Germany or wherever, he said a lot of times the other fighters from the enemy would come over and try to distract the bomber away from its target. That's what it wanted to do. Because if it couldn't shoot it down, at least it needed it to distract it from that strategic target. And that just reminds me of this, that I think sometimes Satan can get us so motivated not to become something that we don't become what we're to be, that we don't bring our original true effect.
Mm-hmm.
So we bring something different. I just love that expression.
Okay, so Gary, what is the kingdom is the area that we affect. What are we bringing when we affect the kingdom? I mean, am I just a joke teller and I make everybody laugh? Of course, you've heard my jokes and you don't laugh, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't try that one, Sam. I don't. let's go for something you'd be successful at.
Well, I could talk about flying my plane, but... Okay, strike two.
Okay, I think I got your question. And we haven't even gotten to the when yet. We're getting there, but... Yes, I mean, so if Jesus said, you know, and the very one whom we are giving reign over our kingdom, if he said, and we all know this because we have worked through this and we try to live this, Isaiah 61, if he's come to proclaim good news, to heal or bind up the brokenhearted, he's come to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for prisoners, and he's here to give us a crown of beauty instead of ashes, and oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of the spirit of despair, then it seems to me that that should be what we are intentionally trying to bring to our kingdom, are those things. That should be the general effect of our life as we bring the specific effect of our life. That would be, to me, advancing the kingdom. Does that answer your question, or what?
No, it does. I mean, so as I'm pursuing my calling and I'm trying to bring an effect into my kingdom, the effect that I'm bringing is healing. It's freedom. It's an awakened heart. It's, I don't remember all those things. I don't have Isaiah 61 memorized, but that's what you're saying. These are the things that God has given us to bring.
Right. I think that's what it means to advance the kingdom, is that's happening. But what I'm not saying, and I mean, we all know this, so I'm just kind of saying this rhetorically, I guess, is that what I'm not saying is that this means everybody needs to go into ministry, because as we all know, our calling is the effect of our life. It's not our job, position, title, 501c3 or nonprofit. And it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with bringing this effect, the specific effect we have, which in general should have the effect of Isaiah 61 on people. It's just really being intentional about it. Let me get to the when for a minute. Let's go there for a second. I find it's so easy. I find this in my own story, and then I want you guys to speak to this. And I find this with the men I talk to as well, because they're similar to me. We're all very similar. Is that it's really easy to feel like it's never when. I don't have enough clarity. The opportunity hasn't availed itself yet. I haven't been affirmed or anointed or given an open door, or, you know, I'm still waiting for God to say, go. I really believe in my heart. I mean, that's why I'm just, I want to do this tonight. I'm so passionate about this. I really believe that the answer to when is always now. It's always now. You know, now, do we have to train more, prepare more? Oh, yeah. Do I need more clarity? For sure. Do I need more of a team? Yep. But I think the enemy really gets us hung up on the when, and I think the answer to when is now. And that's why I put
it. You mean not tomorrow?
Not tomorrow. It's now. And that's why I put up that verse, Ephesians 5:15. That's so striking. Be very careful then. You know, this is living wisely. Be very careful then how you live, not as the unwise, but as the wise, making the most of every opportunity. So I think the when is now, because life is one opportunity into the next. And he's saying, listen, make the most of every opportunity. Now, that doesn't mean we do the same thing in every opportunity, but the answer is now, and we're doing something. And he says, because don't forget the story is the days are evil. You know, there is no war is called off for 5 days. The war is always on. That doesn't mean we're always in the fever pitch of it, but I think the answer to when is now, because life is filled with opportunities. And then, of course, there he says, now, therefore, don't be foolish. Don't be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So mm-hmm. I think the answer to when is always now, but the specifics are listen to God and figure out how does the now work.
Okay, you know? So I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking there's a lot of nows that I'm not doing. Why do we all have to encourage each other to do this now? Why aren't we doing it now?
Well, okay, so what I think about is I think about this verse, and I just happen to have it in front of me on my desk, these three different verses, so I'm not good at Bible memory. You all know that. But it's Hebrews 3:13, which says, encourage one another daily as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. So I think the reason we have to encourage each other, probably especially in the when, and the when is now, is because this idea of being hardened by sin's deceitfulness makes the answer of when not now. You know, it's at 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Warn those who are idle. You know, I think it's when we're thinking, I don't think it's right now. I don't think I'm prepared enough. I don't, you know, so warn the idle, encourage the timid, help the weak. Be patient with all men. Hebrews 10:24. Consider how to spur one another on towards love and good deeds. So there must be a need, scripturally, and I know there's a need personally for me. I'm just passionate about this. I mean, you all know that one of my passion words is intentionality. It just is. And so mm-hmm. I just think we need to encourage each other to say the when is now.
So in your life, Gary, if I could ask you a question, can you give us an example of something that percolated, came up, a desire, and you wanted to do it, and you did it when you were supposed to? And also, did anything ever occur or happen where you waited and it didn't turn out?
That's a good question. Yes. So here's what comes to mind. I know learning about listening prayer for a person and learning about praying kind of deliverance prayer for someone. It's all kind of the same thing, praying for healing or deliverance, and it's listening to God. And I remember learning about it and reading about it, even observing it, but I just knew, you know, when someone would say, hey, would you come and pray for me? And my heart almost seizes up going, I don't know how to do this. I mean, now I feel the pressure. And one, I'm not sure I know how to do it. Secondly, and probably more importantly, I'm really afraid it's not going to work. And I'm going to feel really foolish, which is not the motive. It should be for that person's healing or deliverance or whatever. But it's more of, I'm going to feel foolish. But I know when I did it, especially in the early days, I'd walk away going, okay, I have a new confidence. It actually worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
God actually showed up. I actually heard some things. And even if I didn't understand it, it seemed to make sense to them, and something happened. And I realized from that, I actually learned by going out and trying it. And so now I just kind of look to learn every time I try something. Even when a guy says, hey, can you look at my life and tell me what you see? I can still feel fear in that. But every time I do, I seem to learn something else. Mm. Does that kind of answer that?
I think one of the things I really appreciate is I love a challenge. I love to put myself in a situation where I have to offer. And yet at the same time, there's this scared little boy part of me, you know, with every new venture that comes along. And it just seems to be a reoccurring thing, even though I know I'm going to push through it. But I am scared to death. I think that's a good thing to talk about as guys, that, you know, maybe there's other guys out there that experience that, but that being scared shouldn't be a limitation. Being scared, in my opinion, it's not being a coward. You're just scared. You're still going to do it. You're going to walk into this thing.
There's a risk. I mean, risk is risk, period. Everybody's got risk. It's okay to be a little scared.
Amen. Yeah, and I think more guys are, and we're afraid of that. And if I look at the guys on base camp, I see this bell curve. We've got some in their 30s, which is so cool. We've got some in their 40s. And we got a lot in their 50s and maybe even get into their 60s now. And I think the tendency as you get older is to shy away from that risk. You know, you just don't have enough time to make up for mistakes. So you don't take those risks. Just getting guys into that, no, it's okay to keep going, keep pushing. There's this impossible thing before us so often on the whim because it just seems impossible. But like you've been saying, Gary, it's not just us. It's us and God.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at every situation that it's up to us to make it happen, it seems impossible. But this is what pleases God so much, you know, and I love seeing guys take risks.
And I wonder sometimes that we wait for God to show up before we move. So the answer to the question when is not now, because we're waiting for God to show up before we move. But I wonder if God says, no, I'll show up, but you have to move first, instead of we're sitting here going, no, you show up, and then I'll move. And I love Dave's question here where he said, sure, Gary, but the truth is that often we move and God doesn't show up, which I assume is because he was never in it. So he said, so we become scared of moving out with God at all. And we've all experienced that one, David. And I think that's what gets us really leery about the question of when, and we lean towards the not yet, or I don't know enough yet. Here's my belief, and I've had a lot of times, too, we all have, where we stepped out, and it appeared that God just didn't show up and left us alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a couple things just come to my mind. Is one, when I look back at some of those, I still have no idea what really happened and why it happened. But some of them, I really do feel like God was saying, no, did you see your ability to hang in there, your perseverance, your strength that you had? And then I can kind of look back and go, you know, I think you did show up in certain ways that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah. I almost want to defend God here, you know, and say he didn't show up. Really? You know, really? Maybe you just didn't notice them, you know? And we do so many things outcome-based, you know? We always want the success for what we do. And sometimes it's just, you know, he's in the failure even, you know, but.
You know, Jeff, thank you for saying that, because here is one thing I was thinking about a couple days ago as I was thinking and praying through this conversation. And that is, we've all heard this idea in church before, and that is, when you're in God's will, God's resources are there. And when you're out of God's will, his resources are not there. You know, and so you know what that does? That makes us so scared to move.
Yeah, right.
And we're just thinking that, you know what, God's saying, you better make the right decision, or man, am I going to punish you. You are on your own. And nothing in Scripture says we are on our own.
So, Gary, let me ask you a question. I'm sort of going back to why don't we do it now? The when is now, and why don't we? I think part of it is we still often don't know what the what is in our life. You know, in other words, okay, I'm ready to do it right now, but what is it? It's not. I don't think it's just that we're waiting for a title. I think sometimes we're waiting for the what. And just this last week, I've been thinking a little bit about the passage that says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Or, you know, I felt like God was saying to me, Sam, part of the way I can know what my what is to think about how do I want people to treat me? Because that is the way I'm supposed to treat other people. Does that make sense? It's a way of identifying part of the what of who I am.
That's fascinating, because I do think of the root of that. Sometimes when we have a very unhealed heart, a heart that's in a lot of captivity, we want people to treat us a certain way because we're just familiar with it, right? Like we've talked about the idea that if I live under shame, then actually I'm more comfortable when you actually treat me with shame. Because I know what to do with that. If you give me a compliment, I am very uncomfortable at that moment. I don't know what to do with that. But if I have a healed heart, then you can give me a compliment, and I can just say thank you. I can take that in. I can let God do his work with that. But if I live with an unhealed heart, and therefore it's shame, then I'm going to eventually treat other people with shame as well, because that's all I know. That's what my heart wants. Therefore, that's how I treat your heart. That's a really fascinating idea. That how do we want to be treated? And that probably gives us a glimpse with a healed heart into what we want to offer to other people's hearts.
Well, let me give an example. I have a good friend, and he, you know, part of his wound was a rejection wound. And I was just thinking about this in context of him. So his steers is always looking for how am I going to get rejected again. But I was just thinking about this for him. What if he said, you know, what I want is to be accepted. I want to be accepted and embraced by other men. Well, do unto others as you wish they would do unto you. If he could turn that wound around on its head and say, part of I know what I want to bring is I want to bring acceptance to other men. I want to bring an embrace to other men. I want to bring validation to other men. I think that's something he could do today, right now.
Mm-hmm.
In every phone call he has, every conversation he has.
Yep.
I mean, we can actually take some of the wounds in our life, and we can turn them on their head and turn them into something glorious.
As you're saying that, I'm remembering a story. This is about one of the men that was in a group, I think, with you back in Ann Arbor. And he said, an older gentleman, and he said, now I know what my calling is. You know the story I'm referring to?
Okay. So I was in this group, and one of the things Gary had talked about in his talk is he's talking about part of the way you want to identify what your calling is what are your desires. And so this guy said, this is a 65-year-old guy. He said, hey, I know what my calling is. I like to fly fish. I'm going to go fly fish. And everybody else in the group is thinking, I think there's got to be something deeper about your life than just fly fishing the rest of your life. So one of the guys in the group said, so what do you like about fly fishing? And this guy got quiet, and we had all heard his story. He said, as you guys know, when I was 5 years old, my father abandoned us. He says, I'm 65, I've never seen him again. And he said, it just gave me a heart for boys who have no father. And so he said, every time I go fishing, I take some guys from my neighborhood, because I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of single mothers and boys without fathers. Every time I go fishing, I take some boys with me, and I teach them how to fish. I teach them how to put a worm on a hook. I teach them how to cast. I teach them how to land a fish. I teach them how to clean a fish. And he said, I love it. And one of the guys in the group said, I think your calling is not to be a fisherman, but your calling is to be a father to the fatherless. And, you know, he starts crying because it touched him, and that's what he really was. That's who he really was. And, you know, the cool thing was is about a month later, he called me up on the phone, and he said, Sam, I've really decided what my calling is. I now know what it is. I am a car mechanic. And I thought, oh, no, you know, like we just, like, one step forward, seven steps back. And he just starts laughing. He says, no. He said, I realized the boys in my neighborhood have never changed a flat tire. So he said, I've jacked up my car, and every single tire on my truck has been changed about 40 times because I've taught all the boys in my neighborhood how to change tires. And he says, now I'm teaching them how to do woodwork. And, you know, so all of a sudden he was able to take this negative thing of being abandoned as a kid, and he was able to turn it into something and become a father to the fatherless by fishing, by carpentry, by auto mechanics. And, you know, I'm sure he had him over at his house for movies and everything. He became a father to the fatherless.
You know, and I love that he was doing it now. I love the story because I can just see the transition from a casual desire to a critical desire to a crucial desire. But he never abandoned his casual desire. He didn't. It just became more transcendent. He saw what was behind it. You know, he didn't disdain fly fishing because he found out he wanted to be a father to the fatherless. He knew why he loved it and how to bring, really, what we talked about in the beginning, the Isaiah 61 effect of Jesus through his desire, and kind of went, that's my channel. And, in fact, I can do it through auto mechanics. Right.
Just wasn't satisfied with the casual. It was good, I mean, like you said, but he now had something crucial and critical, something much deeper.
And the answer to the question when was now, which I really believe should be always our answer to the question when. Just we all live with the divine yes in our life. I really believe that we should all be in one of these categories right now and moving to the next. And if we're not, then we're in the state of the answer of not now as opposed to yes to the answer of when. I mean, we should all be either in the ideation state. We're seeking God. What's the idea exactly? What is it you have in my heart to do, to bring the effect? And that's very much the awakening side of things. We've talked about awakening, deepening, fulfilling. And then those next three you see in that circle, you know, you go from ideation to clarification, where God says, now let me bring some more clarity as to this desire in your heart and why and how it plays out. And then from clarification, we start to develop strategy, right? This is how I want to bring it. I want to do fly fishing, and then I want to teach them auto mechanics. And then there's a preparation stage, because we may need to understand more. We may need to be mentored in this a little bit, to be brought along, to be trained. And that's really the deepening phase. Wow. And then there's after preparation in this, there's experimentation. For us to think that we're going to go out and try it and this is it, that's really naive, as opposed to, well, I'm going to step out and try this and learn from it. Be honed, more clarity, mm-hmm. greater
yeah.
strategy. And then there's the execution, really just doing it. And I think if we're truly in one of these stages moving to the next, then the answer to the question when truly is now. But if we're not in any of these stages, we've kind of said not now. And I don't
mm-hmm.
think we're supposed to live in the not now.
Yeah.
You guys, other thoughts as we start to wrap up this call?
You know, I think it's been said that every revolution starts with an idea. And while I say, okay, amen to that, in order to really carry out the revolution, it gets carried out by the many. And that's one of the things I like about Basecamp, is this idea that we would know each other. We would know each other's story. And as these ideas come up and we go into then clarification and strategy, that this isn't just you alone. This is you with some men running these ideas and the intel. And so I just another promotion for Basecamp, and hopefully what you have at home also enabled. We're just not meant to be on our own. This whole grand design is that we would be fitly framed together and working together to bring these ideas to fruition.
Jeff, I'm so glad you said that, because that's something that is available here in Basecamp. Some have enjoyed this, and some don't know what's really here. And that is, as we are all working through this, if we will start with the answer of now, it's not when. The answer to when is now. And we start moving, you know, we can call on each other. I mean, honestly, any of us should be able to call any of us at any time and say, hey, I want to get your eyes on my life. What do you think about this idea? Help me find my idea. Help me clarify this thing. Part of my preparation is I need a team to do this. Would you be on my team to do this? We are all here, and we can do this for each other. We probably just need an invitation. So
yeah.
I guess what I'm asking everyone on Basecamp, and I'm saying this to myself, is ask for what you need. I'm here for you. You're
mm-hmm.
here for me. We're all here. We just need the invitation. We just need to know you need something. And we will be there in a heartbeat, by telephone, by email, by chat, in person if necessary and if possible. You know, sometimes the biggest part of preparation is building a team. And it may be a temporary
yeah.
team.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
we start a new company, a new ministry. But
right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Amen to what you said. So important.
You know, the last thought I would have is it's twofold. One is, I think that the way we walk into our calling is you start with just some steps. You know, the guy who did fly fishing started just by bringing some guys fishing, but he ended up doing more and more and more. So the first thing is we do some steps. But I really like the way you started with this whole conversation with the Dallas Willard quote about bringing the kingdom wherever we are, bringing the kingdom. And I now see how that ties with the casual desires, the critical desires, and the crucial desires. I think that what I'm struck with this is I want to sort of examine my life and, again, take a look at the risks that I'm taking and say, I want to be moving these into the critical and then the crucial kingdom-changing things. It's not just me skiing down a hill or doing something like that, but I want to do things that are changing the world so that if I weren't alive, the world would be different. If I hadn't lived, if I wasn't alive tomorrow, the world would be different, because what I'm doing tomorrow is changing the kingdom. It's not just making me feel good that I'm taking a risk, but the kingdom will be different because of something I've done. It's a critical and a crucial thing. I really like the way you started that, Gary. That was helpful.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that was, you know, Larry Crabb and then Dallas Willard and all the men that have mentored all of us, you know, through their books and their speaking and everything else. And yes, thank you, Sam, with that one as well, is that I have to continually keep in front of me that my real core purpose as a believer, as a follower of Jesus Christ, is to advance the kingdom. And yes, we have to strip off the bags that's been given us. That means you have to go to church. That means you have to be a pastor. That means you have to be a missionary. That means you have to, quote, disciple people. And yes, we do. But we have all those things that instantly kind of rise up out of the water, and we kind of go, can we talk about something else? But really, we're here to advance the kingdom. And that's probably the most exciting thing we can do. And it doesn't mean becoming religious. And it doesn't mean losing our heart or our strength, you know.
So my question is, what kingdom-moving thing can we do today, now? The when is now.
Yeah.
Jeff, Sam,
thanks
you.
Everybody.
Everyone else, thank you. And good night.